This is 2 Main Street on WNIN-FM. I'm David James, and my guest is Dr. Linda Bennett, who became the third president of the University of Southern Indiana in 2009. She's retiring from the campus after a storied career in higher education. Dr. Bennett, welcome again.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Well, this is deja vu. Our earlier interview was recorded in March, but it disappeared, and we're blaming the Russian hackers for that. So thanks for joining me for round two. But I think this is fortuitous because it gives us a chance to talk about your recently named successor, Dr. Ron Roshan.
Absolutely, and I'm always glad to talk about Dr. Roshan.
Now, you hired him, is that correct?
I did, back in 2010. I had been the provost, and so when I became president in 2009, I had to fill that role of the chief academic officer. So we did a national search, and the minute I sat down with Ron Roshan, we talked so easily, and we both shared many of the same values in terms of the academic life that I felt that he would be a great partner, and he certainly has been.
Well, he certainly knows the campus. He's been there, as long as you have, really?
8 years, yes.
And tell us something about Ron.
Well, you know, he is someone who has an easy way. I mean, he embraced this community. He embraced the campus. He is... He has high energy level, so I'm telling you now, if you think it's going to be quiet, it's not going to be. And I think that's wonderful because we're a young campus, and I think he fits us very well.
And he has a couple of young children?
He does. He has a son, Allende, who is a political science major, I'm proud to say, as
wow.
a poli-sci major myself,
yes.
at Indiana University. And then he has a lovely daughter who's graduating from the Signature School, and is a top scholar in her own right, and will also be heading to Indiana University to study business. So he has a lovely wife, Lynn, who just is amazing and has this wonderful, warm personality. So I'm just so excited of what Ron and Lynn Roshan are going to bring to USI.
Well, on another topic, you served as the chair of the WNIN Board of Directors, and thanks to you and others, we're able to have this conversation right now in our new building on 2 Main Street. We had the dedication of the building
yes.
a few weeks ago, and it's spectacular.
Oh, I tell you, I have to say, being on the WNIN board, I mean, for me, it's a mission of love. I love public media. I love what WNIN does with programming. I think you just bring so much great local content along with the national and international content that it's always on my radio. I tend to be more of a radio listener than a television watcher, though I have just downloaded the WNIN app onto my iPad, and I am tickled.
Oh, you are official now. That's great.
Absolutely.
Now, before becoming a school administrator, you were a classroom teacher. Can you take us back to that first day that you stood in front of a class?
Oh, I tell you what, I remember teaching, after I finished my doctorate, I taught in the evening college at the University of Cincinnati. And you have to keep in mind, I'm this girl, I mean, I've just barely finished my PhD, so I'm green around the gills, and I'm teaching an evening college class, and I had a retired Army sergeant in my class who prefaced every question with, "Little girl? Little girl." So that was my my socialization into the teaching profession. And needless to say, you know, over time, you develop a sense of humor and a little steel as you go through the experiences. But I loved teaching. I'm such a drama queen.
Well, did you come from a family of teachers?
No, indeed. My mother and father, you know, I think of them with such love. I mean, neither of them had a chance to finish even high school. And my father found out late in life. He finished a GED when he was in his 40s and discovered he was a whiz at mathematics. And I asked him constantly, why didn't I get that gene of being a whiz at mathematics? But neither one of them had the opportunity. My father died in 1994, but I was able to bring my mother to Evansville. And she got to see me at USI and becoming president at USI. And she passed away just last summer at the age of 95. So I was so grateful that she was able to come to town and enjoy. She loved being here. And so I think about them often. And I think I'm just grateful for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had the opportunity they didn't have.
Absolutely.
And you took advantage of it.
And I appreciated it so much.
So what is the high when you teach?
I really think it's the sense of that you've just made a connection. I see that so often. You know, I used to look at my old lecture notes, and I must have talked 90 miles an hour. How did I get that all in 50 minutes? But in time, with experience, I learned, you know, what's the most important thing I want them to know, and how can I connect the dots, and how can I keep repeating material? Because music knows you learn through repetition. The rest of us have problems with that sometimes. And so when I could connect the dots and see the connection in their eyes and have them actually use it, that's whenever you say, that's magic. That's magic. That's whenever it works the best.
Well, I know I've done some teaching, adjunct faculty teaching, and you're right. There is a high when you look at these young people and they look bored for a while, and then they kind of look around, and then all of a sudden they kind of get it, and they, oh, I must have made a connection. And it really is a high. It's a classroom high, definitely.
Well, today you have to make sure they're looking up from their phones.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I didn't have to mess with that, definitely. They're probably looking out the window or something,
yeah,
or writing notes, whatever. Now, teachers, I mean, I know you have a great affection for teachers, and that is a great profession, and how would you encourage somebody to get into teaching? I mean, there's a lot of people are think, well, they don't get paid enough. They don't get the respect that they deserve. So how do we recruit teachers?
You know, one of the most powerful things, I just, I often make presentations in classes, K through 12. I just did a reading. We have a children's learning center on campus. So I read a story to three-year-olds. And I'm telling you, that's a tough audience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there is such magic in knowing that you're involved in the life of a young person and that you are part of a long line of individuals who's helping to develop that person and a whole room full of people. To become part of someone's life, to become intertwined in terms of their development, is a powerful thing. There's no price tag you can put on it, but I will say this. We don't pay teachers enough, K through 12. And at times I'm most confused that those who deal with the youngest children, the most important stage ever, mm-hmm, are paid the least. And I think we have got to address that, because I have watched over and over again these individuals just work magic with young people.
I know in a lot of countries, teachers receive a lot better pay. I think in the Scandinavian countries, mm-hmm, they are definitely professionals. They get professional pay and they get time off to do their studies and travel, and a good model there. But we'll see what happens. I think it's an issue now the teachers are bringing to the fore. We've seen them protest at state capitals,
sure,
and
mm-hmm,
demand more pay, and maybe we're on the right track there. Of course, teachers have other things to deal with just besides educating youngsters. They have all the social problems now that come with these families. And so, I mean, it's really a demanding job.
Very demanding. And in fact, you know, we have put more and more burden on education literally to be a substitute family. And teachers, the wide range of situations they see, it's just amazing. And yet I know so many who are so dedicated. They love what they do, and they love being able to be part of the lives of children and young adults. And thank God they do love it, because they make a difference.
We are talking to Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring from the University of Southern Indiana. We're talking about the importance of having good teachers in the classroom, and we're going to talk about political science as well. That's one of your passions. And how did you get involved in that?
You know, I have a picture in my office of a class I took in my senior year of high school at Walnut Hills High School in Cincinnati. And it's a Sino-Soviet totalitarianism class.
Right.
So, yes, you know, we were real party animals. No, we weren't. But there was a teacher there, Harriet Russell, and she had a nickname, Slick. And I just I loved her class so much, and so enjoyed reading about politics and history that it became a lifetime passion. Truly enjoyed it. Went into college, and I was one of those who never changed her major. I was a poli-sci major from day one, all the way through with, you know, kind of some side interests in terms of literature. I took several years of French, but always stayed true to a love of politics.
And well, how would you define political science? I mean, it covers a wide area. Is there a way we can kind of pin it down to a sentence or two?
Well, you know, there are those who defy using the term science when you talk about politics. But I was certainly trained in my doctoral training as an empirical political scientist, so we crunch numbers. So you can learn a lot from that, and you can also learn a lot from great stories. And you cannot understand where we are in politics today if you don't read history.
That's right. That's right. History repeats itself.
Unfortunately.
Over and over again. And I talked to Dr. Tom Kazee at the University of Evansville. He's retiring, too. He's also a political scientist.
That's right.
And he says he enjoys his conversations with you as you solve the world's problems.
Yeah, you know, if it was that easy, I mean, maybe they should just call us.
Well, I think you guys should start your own think tank now. There you go.
You know, that sounds like work, David. Come on. It's called retirement.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to talk about retirement in a little bit. And we're also going to talk about, well, kind of the current state of politics and how things are working and how things aren't working. We're talking to Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring as president of the University of Southern Indiana. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. Our guest is Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring as president of the University of Southern Indiana. Now, you received your undergraduate and graduate degrees, as we said, in political science, and it's important to you, I know, that students know the importance of a good and responsive government on all levels.
Absolutely. And it's also important to understand that the kind of political system we have is a very complex one. You need to be informed. Without the information, you can end up going astray, that's for certainly sure. And a democracy is a very fragile entity. It can be easily derailed. Framers of the Constitution recognized that very much. If you read the Federalist essays written back in the late 1780s, when they were arguing about whether to ratify our current Constitution, they weren't really big fans of democracies because they said democracies do not last.
And democracies are always challenged, too. I mean, there's always challenges to the freedom of speech and our other Bill of Rights. So it's something that we have to guard, I think, constantly.
We do. We have to make certain that, and again, I come back to that whole notion about information and the quality of information. We have a lot of information flowing. I mean, we've got so many information sources on the internet. What we need is the ability to judge what is good information and what is not so good information.
And also it's important to have good people in political office and for the voters to be informed about these people and their views.
Well, I have to say this, and I do want to take this opportunity. I had the opportunity to go to Indianapolis so many times because we are a public institution and we are always going to the state legislature, of course. I have to tell you, we have got an amazing legislative delegation from Southwest Indiana. I met so many wonderful individuals in public service in the legislature in Indianapolis. So I think sometimes we paint with too broad a brushstroke. It always discourages me when people say the word politician as if it's a negative word. Without politicians, without those willing to sacrifice for public service, I don't know how you carry on the business of a democracy. That's where it's all done, in politics. And it's up to us what the caliber of that political exchange is.
And I know that politicians, too, I mean, they take a lot of heat. And they have to respond to a lot of constituents. A lot of pressure there to do the right thing. And sometimes you have to compromise. And I think that's the nature of politics.
That has always been the nature of politics. Anyone who thinks they're always right is bound to be very difficult when it comes to trying to resolve things in a democracy.
There's a when I interviewed Wendell Ford, Senator Wendell Ford of Kentucky, when he was retiring from the Senate, and went to his office in Washington, and on the wall he had this portrait of Henry Clay, the great compromiser, and he was that was one of his heroes. And I said, "Well, that's what you need. That's what we always need, I think, right, you know, on Capitol Hill. Okay, you've studied the public's view of American politics. I guess the opinion, well, does it change often, or is it always changing?
Well, I think there are some constancies, but I also think as each new generation comes, there are differences. I think the newer generation is far less tied to political parties, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how the political parties evolve as we move ahead. But so there are constancies, and then there's always change. And again, the issues, sometimes we see disturbing issues that return and that we think have been wrapped up and closed in another era, but they come back to us. So I think that notion that history repeats itself, what you said earlier, is quite true.
Mm-hmm. I know third parties keep emerging, but they just don't catch on.
You know why?
Why?
The system is rigged for the two parties, period.
Oh, there you go. Okay. How so?
Well, certainly if you take a look at, I used to talk to students about how districts are drawn by political parties, by the party in control in the state legislatures.
Gerrymandering?
Yes, just a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it usually protects the interest of existing parties. When you get to presidential elections, third parties have a very hard time being able to go through the process to win the votes in the Electoral College, going state to state, having the depth of organization to do that across the nation. So the game is a little bit rigged for the two political parties. And what the parties do when they do see a strong third party pop up is that they will co-opt either the message or the person into the existing party. So it's very difficult for a third party to make a stand.
Well, we've had some pretty good runs, John Anderson and Ross Perot.
Right. Ross Perot probably was one of the most recent in terms of a successful third party run in terms of comparison and history. But getting those Electoral College votes is another thing.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the third parties, too, though, in the recent presidential election, it was so close between, you know, Trump and Clinton, and the votes that went to those alternative parties may have switched the election around.
Well, again, I think the election of 2016 was an indicator of how far out of touch both major political parties were.
Well, that's true. That's true. It was certainly a surprise on election night. Surprised everybody, all the pundits who seem to know everything. Okay, what about, we're talking about politics with Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring as president of the University of Southern Indiana. Our confidence in our Congress, in our lawmakers, what about that?
Well, if you take a look at some of the public opinion polls, I think you won't find too many periods of time in American history where folks had a lot of confidence in Congress. It's always been a rowdy organization. The House has always been quite often far more rowdy than the Senate, but then the House, they're up for election every 2 years. So there's always an election running, so the rhetoric is always high. In the Senate, you know, certainly a little more staid organization, but you wouldn't know that recently.
Right.
So I think, you know, Congress has always been in the crosshairs. But what you'll find in most polls is people may not like Congress, but they love their Congress member.
That's right. That's right. And some of them have served, 14, 15, 20
That's
years,
right. That's
20
right.
terms in Congress.
Oh, yes.
And the voting record of Americans compared to other countries. We seem to always, you know, call people to the polls, and it's the importance of going to the polls. And, well, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I think it just depends on the candidates and the atmosphere, don't you think?
Very much. It depends upon the setting, the issues, and the candidates. These things go in cycles. If you take a look at registered voters, the percentage who turn out is always higher. But those eligible to vote, I mean, that's always a challenge. And we're watching what happens, especially with younger Americans who may not feel as if going to the polls is as useful.
Now, women in politics, seems like we're seeing more women getting involved. And, of course, Hillary Clinton almost cracked the glass ceiling. A lot of controversy about that election, everything. You think we're going to see a female president
I hope
in
so.
Our lifetime?
I hope so. Because I'd hate to think that half of Americans have nothing to bring to national leadership. I think there is great talent among a number of women, so in national office and in state offices. So I hope so.
Well, I think that's, well, maybe we'll see that, hopefully, in the next couple of
it's
elections.
It's so sad.
Maybe.
It's 2018, folks.
And, well, another thing we're going to talk about is the one-issue voters. It seems like we have a lot of those, that people either on abortion rights or gun rights or immigration. It seems like they focus in on one issue and just write it.
That's not unusual, though, and it is also an indicator of lower levels of political information. There's less context there, but you're seeing that in Europe as well, in several European countries right now. So it's not an unusual thing, something that someone feels passionately about, intensely about. They know a lot about that one issue. They may or may not have strong views about a variety of other issues.
Now, back to education. You're leaving USI, and what are you most proud of in your career at USI?
Oh, my goodness. It's been such a wonderful ride. I've enjoyed the past 15 years so much. It's a remarkable institution, and I think, quite honestly, coming into the presidency right after a major economic recession, when even the funding formula for public higher education was changing, the fact that we were able to navigate that over a period of time, there were moments when, as we looked at it, we weren't sure what was coming next. And so being able to navigate that and to have an even stronger base of support now in Indianapolis, that is something that I'm very proud of. And certainly I have to thank also my Vice President for Government and University Relations, Cindy Brinker. I mean, she certainly lifted a heavy load in that time of great change. Mm-hmm. In terms of public higher education in Indiana.
Where do you see USI in the next 10 years?
I think it's going to be exciting. First of all, I'm very excited about the leadership of Dr. Ron Rochon as he comes on board. And I think, I see USI developing more graduate programs. We've just been cleared by the Commission for a new bachelor's program in statistics. So I think you're going to see us, we're very attuned to the region and to things that help us to develop economically. And we're going to continue to do that. That's why our engineering programs have grown. We'll be offering electrical engineering soon. So I see us, again, continuing what has been the practice throughout our history, and that is being very, very responsive to economic development needs in this region. And I do see us growing in terms of graduate programs. Excuse me. And I think the opportunities are there, too, for us to broaden in terms of applied research and to make more connections across the disciplines in applied research, to have more partnerships across other universities. I think there are a number of things that I see ahead for USI that are exciting.
Well, I'll let you get a drink of water here, and I'll kind of go back in history. I can remember the origins of USI used to be Indiana State University, Evansville, located in the old Centennial School on St. Joe Avenue, not too far from Mead Johnson.
That's right.
Old brick building there, like three stories or something.
Yes, yes.
Limited parking. It was the nascent, of this university, and to see where it's come in these 40 years or so.
I tell you, there are so many times, we have a banquet for our student athletes who graduated many years ago, Hall of Fame banquet, and it's remarkable. Some of those individuals come back and they've not been on campus for 20, 30, 40 years. And when they see the campus, they are blown away. They cannot believe that this is their university. Mm-hmm. There's a model of Centennial School in our library. I really encourage folks to visit the library and take a look at that model. I've seen so many of the pictures. And there are faculty who still remember, retired faculty who still remember teaching in Centennial. So that's been one of the greatest gifts to me ever, is to be able to come to a university where the founders are still there, where the pioneers are mm-hmm. still there and they talk about what that experience was like. That has been the greatest gift to me.
And of course, when you go to the campus, I mean, it's a sprawling campus. You have all these acres, and you have nature areas and hiking trails. It's really amazing. You have growth potential there.
Oh, absolutely. We've got 1,400 acres.
Wow.
The core academic core of the class is of the campus is located on about 300 acres. So we have a lot of space to sprawl, and we've just finished a master planning process, and I am really excited about what that's going to bring to us as we look ahead.
I know traffic has been an issue there, and I think that's improving too with the improvements to the expressway and the bypass.
No question. And in fact, as students, when they ask about parking, I don't have a dedicated parking space, and I tell them. For instance, today, you know, now today's reading day for exams, but I come into campus sometimes 9, 10 o'clock because I've got morning meetings downtown or elsewhere. I always find a parking space. It may not be in the front row. It may not be next to the building, but I find one.
Well, that's what they say about downtown Evansville. There are parking spaces here.
Yes.
You just have to look. They're there.
That's
okay.
Right.
Well, our guest is Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring as president of the University of Southern Indiana. And coming up, we're going to find out a little bit more personal information, how a wayward cat ended up as a member of the Bennett household, and other inside information provided by our spies on campus. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and we're talking to Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring as president of the University of Southern Indiana. Now, you were recently recognized by the Indiana Legislature, Leadership Evansville, the Girl Scouts. That has to be very rewarding for you.
You know, this community is amazing. I have to tell you, it's the most amazing community I've lived in across my career. It is such an active community. We have so many not-for-profit organizations active in our community addressing key issues. So then we have these wonderful businesses and industries who reach out a helping hand to make the community better. So it's a healthy community. So yes, that's how I look at that, is that these are just organizations in our community doing amazing work. And it's an honor to be recognized by these outstanding groups.
And I was at the luncheon where you were recognized as the Woman of Distinction honoree of the Girl Scouts of Southwestern Indiana. And there was a young lady there, a high school student, Lindsay Field, who was honored, one of the Gold Award recipients. And she's a kind of a young person that we're just glad to see coming up the ranks. She had the Smiles for Haiti program. Remember that?
Yes, yes. I mean, a young woman who starts with a plan to provide dental, mm-hmm. toothbrushes, just simple things for kids in Haiti. And she starts with her region here mm-hmm. and branches out to all across the country. And the amount of dental equipment that she was able to get to share with the children in Haiti. Think of a young person like that who suddenly says, well, let's reach out to the entire country. That takes grit and brass. And I just was so amazed by her.
Well, those young people are coming up. And so
they are.
It's a good look at our future.
That's right.
And I talked to Lindsay on our program. We had her on with the leader of the Girl Scouts, and she talked about her program. She's going back to Haiti with more supplies.
Oh, my goodness.
So she's keeping the Smile for Haiti program going. That's Lindsay Field. She's a student at Gibson Southern High School. Wonderful young lady.
She is.
And, okay, the cat story.
Ah, yes.
Cat shows up on campus, is that right?
Well, it was when we were living in the university home, which is off McDowell, right behind campus.
Okay.
And I'm hearing these pathetic little mews. And as I go out to look, here's this tiny little kitten, and it's got a terrible scratch above one eye, and it's all alone. So it took a little while. I had to listen what I called it pity poor me songs, all the meowing. So whenever I was at Appalachian State in North Carolina, Alison Krauss would come by for concerts, and she said in one of her concerts, she said, I sing all the pity poor me songs. And so I said, well, this kitty cat is like Allison. She's singing the pity poor me song. So I named her Allie.
How's she getting along with your dogs?
Oh, she is fat and happy.
Really?
We have two long-haired miniature dachshunds. Allie is now as large as they are, and she rules the roost. All cats rule any roost they're in.
Yeah, so we have a cat, Eden, and the same thing there. She rules the household. Now, you're an avid reader. What are some of your favorite authors and books?
Oh, my goodness. You know, my stepson always sends us a selection. He has a master's in history, and my husband and I love reading history. So right now I'm reading a book that he sent to me. By Peter Ackroyd, called Tudors, and it's about the Tudor regime in England, starting with Henry VIII. And, oh, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful description of the religious wars across the reign of the Tudors. So that's really enjoyable. But he has sent us so many wonderful books about both American, European history. It's wonderful.
Well, I love all the anecdotes, the things you don't read in your history book at school.
That's right.
Their personal lives, their peccadilloes.
Yes, indeed.
A lot of those, definitely, with the royal families. Let's see. Oh, I know. I wanted to ask you. We were talking about politics, and I think I asked you this in the first interview, which was erased by the Russians. Have you ever thought about running for political office?
You know, years ago when I was in Cincinnati completing my doctorate, Cincinnati was a town at that time that had three political parties. The third party was a Charterite party. They were called the Charterites, and they emerged out of the Progressive period, and that's from, you know, the late 1890s going into the early 20th century. But it was a reform party, so it kind of straddled between the Democratic and Republican parties. And in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, that would be cool, is to get into the Charterite party and kind of be an irritant to both sides. So instead, I went into teaching, and I tell my students I'm an equal opportunity tormentor. I pick on both.
So are there still Charterites out there?
You know, I haven't heard. I haven't lived in Cincinnati now for a long time, but I think the party is pretty well faded.
Gone underground, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. What did I tell you about third parties?
That's right. They have a tough time surviving.
They do.
And also been told that you are a baseball fan.
Yes, it's a sad story.
The Reds, I know you're a Cincinnati Reds fan, and they had a terrible start, and they got rid of the manager.
Yes, but that won't help.
Oh, you don't think so?
It's in the ownership. But I'll hold my saying there.
Marge Schott.
Oh, I met Marge Schott.
Oh, well, tell me about Marge Schott.
Well, to put myself through college, I worked for a tax attorney. And Marge Schott had an antique business in the same building.
And she was the owner of the Cincinnati Reds.
She was the owner of the Cincinnati Reds.
The Pete Rose era.
Oh, yes. The live, you know, when they used to win.
The big red machine.
Like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So she would come out all the time. Oh, she was loud and boisterous. So, yeah, she was a character. True character.
She really she kept things active there and kept them in the news.
Yes, she did, but at least she also wanted to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Reds are in deep trouble.
Well, there's always next year. That's what the Cubs fans
said. That's what we said
forever.
Last year and the year before that.
Okay, we won't go into that.
The year before that.
All right. So maybe you'll have to switch. Well, I don't know if you're going to switch allegiance with the Cardinals or not. But
I don't know. We're looking at the Cubbies. Now that's going to get me some comments.
There you go. Okay. Well, we won't go there. Okay. Another Evansville tradition, and I'm sure you had to take part in that, is the West Side Nut Club Fall Festival. Of course, USI, close to the West Side.
Absolutely.
And that's just a major attraction. And what did you think when you went to your first fall festival?
It's an amazing event, I tell you. And I want to take this opportunity to say the West Side Nut Club has done so much for USI. It's been a great organization. And the fact that that Nut Club festival helps so many not-for-profits raise money that really helps them throughout the year. It's just an amazing event. Second largest street fair in the United States.
That's correct, next to the Mardi Gras in New Orleans, I think.
You combine that with great funnel cakes and you can't miss. You just cannot miss.
Well, I was going to ask your favorite guilty pleasure there.
Oh.
Is that the funnel cake?
Funnel cakes, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
Not the brain sandwich.
Well, you know,
No.
It's just the texture of it.
Yeah,
I can't really get involved.
I can't get beyond no.
And it's a gray food.
Yeah, no.
No. Okay, we won't talk anymore about that. Yeah. Okay, now, also I've been told that your favorite campus treat is something called a smoothie, a peanut butter smoothie.
At Red Mango.
Boy. What's Red Mango?
Now, Red Mango is, it's a chain, it's a frozen yogurt chain. And so it's probiotic yogurt, so it's very good for you.
Of course.
But it's right downstairs from my office. And if you ask me, I was telling my husband the other day, what'll I do when Red Mango's no longer right downstairs?
Speaking of your husband, Stephen, and he's political science.
He's a political scientist as well, yes. So we talk politics and history all the time.
And your retirement, I think you're going to stay in the Evansville area,
right? We are. We're both. My husband comes from central Illinois, so he really likes this area. We're both thoroughgoing Midwesterners.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
And so, yeah, we're staying.
Now, the last time we talked, you were talking about an Alaskan cruise?
Yeah, we're hoping to. Yeah. We're planning on going through the Inland Passage of Alaska.
Beautiful.
We've never gone on a cruise before.
Oh, so really?
This is our first.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's going to be an experience for you, definitely. Cruising is really quite nice because, of course, a cruise like that, you're going to stop at some interesting ports,
right.
And there's a lot of history involved in this, too. You'll like that.
And we will both enjoy that.
Definitely. Now, these conversations over coffee about politics, what are you guys talking about? Are just the issues of the day, or are there certain hot button that you're talking about these days in politics?
We're like the kids on campus. We're both married to our phones, too. So we both check the news first thing in the morning. We both pick up a copy of the Courier Press and read through that. So whatever issue is there, sometimes we'll talk about. What we really enjoy, too, is history more than most other topics. And so we're right now looking at a series that's we stream video. I'm so proud of us.
Wow.
We're streaming off of our Amazon Prime membership here, and we're looking at a series on World War One. What a chaotic mess World War One was.
Oh.
The devastation, the destruction, it is just inconceivable. So that's really occupied a lot of our conversations.
Was it Barbara Tuchman?
The Proud Tower. Yes. What a great book. It made me think of that. I read that many years ago. Made me think of that book again, but what a mess and truly the decline of the old world triggered by the First World War.
Well, the carnage of the World War One. I mean, you read about this and the bodies and they walk into the machine gun fire and the mustard gas. I mean, and you would think after some kind of experience like that, no, you would never want to have a war again.
Well, I think,
it's supposed to be the war to end all wars.
Well, really, I think if you think about World War II and the beginning of that in England, Neville Chamberlain was criticized roundly for being an appeaser. And understandably, folks were upset. But he had, if you had witnessed the carnage of the First World War and the destruction and the number of deaths, real trepidation entering into another world war was understandable. What was hard for them to understand was the determination of an Adolf Hitler to be destructive and the fact that the choices were limited.
I just had an interview with Mike Wicker
a couple
of weeks ago.
He writes wonderful books.
He writes the books about this spy, Erica Lehman, and her adventures in World War II and trying to steal the plans for the landing ship tank at the Evansville shipyard. Oh, so you're familiar with Mike Wicker's work. So we had a good discussion about World War II and he loves that history as well. And he said his father was an Army Ranger on D-Day.
Oh my goodness.
At Omaha Beach and was wounded.
Oh.
So he shared some stories of that. So
I tell you, the sacrifice of that generation.
Oh my goodness. And you said your father served?
My father served in the Army. He was in the Messenger Corps.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in the European Theater of Operations, and the sacrifices of that generation is awe-inspiring, and we've got to make sure that sacrifice was not in vain.
And we, make sure the today's students know about that, too.
Absolutely critical that they understand the war and the ideologies that brought us to the war.
I mean, it's been a long journey for this democracy and a lot of challenges facing all the civil war.
Oh, yes.
And all the civil rights. But we survive. We survive all of this.
Well, again, understanding the richness of history and understanding the sad chapters as well as the glorious chapters, you cannot know all of the history unless you understand both.
That's right. And one of Mike Wicker's books, I think Proper Sudha, is about the rise of the Klan in Indiana mm-hmm. in the 20s. And I don't think a lot of people know about that.
That's right.
So there was a lot of divisive activity going on in this state. We've gotten out of that. I know there are still hate groups out there, and I know that's always a concern of anybody wanting to protect our democracy.
Absolutely. A great concern.
So anyway, so in your retirement, are you going to be on the sidelines, or are we going to see you involved in boards and events?
Well,
have you decided that yet?
I'm already serving on some boards now that I truly enjoy. I'm on the Deaconess Health System Board, learning so much about the health industry and enjoying that process. Strong organization. I'm, of course, on the WNIN board.
Good.
For another year.
And we are so
and,
glad.
Well, I have so enjoyed it to see Brad Kemmel's leadership of this organization and to see the kind of programming and the strength of the staff. I think your new show is going to be a wonderful addition. In fact, I was listening the other day to Two Main Street
and
enjoying
the
interview so much with Jeff Lyons. I listened to a little bit of it again.
Carol McClintock?
Yes, I heard Carol. So I'm just enjoying it so much. So I think there are bright days ahead for WNIN. And again, I care about the community. I will certainly stay active to some degree, but I still believe in the word retirement and that you take a little bit of a step back mm-hmm. and enjoy.
That's right. Well, you certainly earned that step back for a while. Now, let's continue promoting Tri-State Public Media here. This building, its location on 2 Main Street, so visible, and we have the new theater now, too.
Oh, the new theater. When I think of the potential of public discussions we can have, combining video with folks from the community to come together and to talk about various issues. I wish the theater had been there for the premiere of Evansville at War.
Yeah.
What a wonderful video that was.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think the opportunity is there really to be a platform. This is going to be a magnet for the community. Think of our role in terms of education, the young, the programming that we have. Think of what some of our marvelous staff here at WNIN, K-PASA Midwest, I've listened to so many of those, and that's on my app too. You've got to download that WNIN app onto your devices because I'm telling you, I was looking at it the other day and I thought, oh, this is wonderful. I can go back and I can listen again to those broadcasts that I've enjoyed. So it's just, there are bright days ahead. WNIN is going to be an important spark to increase the vibrance of the downtown area.
Well, the theater, we're mentioning that, Aaron Gibson, one of the instructors at USI.
Yes.
She is premiering her film, Two Elephants.
Oh, the book she's with.
In the public theater.
It's going to be wonderful.
And I'm going to be talking to her in a future Two Main Street episode about the two elephants at Mesker Park Zoo,
Kay
and Bunny.
Her work in that is just
phenomenal.
It's
going to
be great. It's such a touching
story. And that's going to be a venue for projects like that.
Absolutely.
And both universities can use it and the community can use it. And that's one thing about this is a community project and this is part of the community.
That's right. Think how much musical talent we have in this region.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the studio, ways in which we can record local artists. I think this is going to be marvelous.
So anyway, quickly, tell me about your journey to get to Evansville.
Well, you know, whenever I was... during my career, I started my career at a private liberal arts college in Springfield, Ohio, Wittenberg. And the biggest change for me in my career was going from a private college to a public university. It was so different. After that, the other changes really weren't that stark. But I so enjoyed going to Northern Kentucky University, right across the river from Cincinnati. It was young university, mm-hmm. spunky. A lot of students of all ages, adult students right out of high school. I loved it. And I told folks there, when I went to Appalachian State, another great university, long history, good history, but I said, I'd love to get back to a kind of a place with an attitude like NKU. And my dean from NKU called me at one point while I was at Appalachian State, and he said, "You've always said you want to come back to a place with attitude. I've got one for you." And it was USI. And the minute I came to interview on campus, I knew that the fit was good. Enjoyed talking with President Hoops. I enjoyed meeting everyone on campus. And I said, this is it. I called my husband and I said, if they call, we're coming. And indeed, I've never regretted it.
Well, we're so glad that you took that call and made the trip to the Tri-State. So it's been a good ride for you here.
It has been wonderful.
And we will see you around in your retirement.
Indeed.
Best wishes. Our guest has been Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring as president of the University of Southern Indiana and handing over the reins to the current provost, Dr. Ron Rashan. And you've given him a good review, and I know you welcome him to the campus.
I'm telling you now, exciting days are ahead.
Well, we wish you very, very much success and happiness in your retirement.
Thank you.
And again, thanks for your continued support of public media in the Tri-State. 2 Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport. I'm talking to Tim Black right now, Vice President for Development at WNIN, the Tri-State Public Media Center. I just interviewed Dr. Linda Bennett, who is retiring from the University of Southern Indiana. She was chair of the WNIN Board of Directors, and she has done a lot for this station.
Yes, she has, David. I mean, she was a fantastic. She was the chairperson when I first came on board here at WNIN, and I mean, she was wonderful in that role, as I think you would probably expect, considering the position she held at USI. She was definitely one of those individuals who, there was an agenda for our board meetings and she followed that, and her meetings were very, very much on time. And I say that with a little bit of a smile because, sometimes meetings can run off the rails a little bit, but Dr. Bennett was very good about keeping things where they needed to be. More seriously, she was a great individual to have here, I think probably most importantly because she was here at the same time that we got ready to start the big Move to Maine Capital campaign, and I think she was certainly a singular force behind that.
Well, the transition, of course, from the Carpenter House to our location here on 2 Main Street, well, a game changer, really, for Tri-State Public Media. And Dr. Bennett was right there on the ground floor of that.
Yeah.
And she's still a member of the board.
She is.
And she's still committed to public media.
Yeah. And that wouldn't – I don't think that should surprise anyone. Again, heading USI and with, the engagement that she has for public education, the passion she has for education, I think those things sort of merged very nicely with that role here at WNIN. And she certainly – Dr. Bennett is one of those individuals that when she is involved with something, when she is committed to something, she's definitely on board with it.
And her role as chair, what exactly did she do in that position?
Well, that's an interesting question because I think if there's anyone listening to the program who's been involved with boards, boards sometimes they can be a little bit lax in getting things done. Boards sometimes, unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, sometimes you're on a board almost because you feel like you have to be on a board. Dr. Bennett took this role very seriously, and as I said earlier, she came to board meetings with an agenda. There were things that she wanted to accomplish, and I think she saw the position of being the chair of this board much in the same way that she saw being president at USI. There were things that she wanted to accomplish in that position, and she made sure that we got them done, and she wasn't shy about pointing to people in the room and putting them in charge of things and different projects, and things got done. And I think that's probably one of the great testaments to Dr. Bennett's role in that is that things got done.
They did get done, definitely. Thanks a lot, Tim Black, Vice President for Development at WNIN. Next week on Two Main Street, join me as we get to know two elephants and the person behind a new film that solves a mystery that started at Evansville's Mesker Park Zoo. Kay and Bunny were major attractions at the zoo for 70 years. The death of a zookeeper led to the disappearance of Kay and the arrival of Bunny. What happened to Kay haunted Erin Gibson, who teaches journalism at the University of Southern Indiana, and she used her investigative skills to try and answer questions unanswered for decades. Now her film, Two Elephants, is ready to be told and seen on WNIN Channel 9. Erin Gibson shares her journey to find out the truth about Kay next week on Two Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Two Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11, and our interviews are also online at WNIN.org.